Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Hi, this is Stephen Oliver, CEO of National Association of Professional Martial Artists. Glad to be with you today. I am joined by Inner Circle Media member, Jonathan Metcalf. Jonathan, welcome to our call.
Hello, Mr. Oliver. Thank you for having me on the call.
Oh, I'm so delighted. We've been trying to get time to do this for, I think, 9 months now, so we finally get it slotted here. And, hey, Jonathan, before we go any further, tell everybody a little bit about your martial arts background, where you came from, and then ultimately how you ended up deciding to do a school of your own.
Okay. Well, I started martial arts not as a young child, but sort of dabbled in high school. My parents wouldn't let me do it because they thought it was violent, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, by the time I was old enough to sort of do it behind their back, I started doing that because I was one of those kids who started out in soccer, and it was either get good or get out at a certain point. And I didn't have the athletic drive or ability to stay in, so I got out. But I kind of missed being physical, so I, you know, did the chess team and science team route for a while. But by high school, I was looking to do something physical that was both mental and physical. So I went back in the martial arts a little bit where I could. And then in college, I delved into it more deeply and started training with some guys who were part of a big franchise organization. And in the middle of college, I took a year off, and I went over and trained in Taiwan and Nepal with my kung fu teacher's teacher. And, you know, over the course of college and high school and summers here and there, I trained in 5 states and 3 countries. I trained with Asian national teams and with the old guys in the parks in Taiwan. So I had a wide variety of training experiences. And when I got back from college, it was I had a few different career choices available to me. I spoke Chinese pretty well, and I spoke Tibetan pretty well. So intelligence services, investment banking, or I could open a school with the franchise company that the guys who I was training with were from. And I chose option C because it seemed like the most gratifying thing at the end of the year. I would not have just made rich people richer, but would have been helping people day in, day out. And just knowing that people were happy to see me every day and I was happy to see them as part of my work experience, that was important to me. So in 1996, a week after I graduated college, I took over a school that was failing. I had 16 students, and within a quarter got that up to, I don't know, about 30 in a couple months, and doubled it every quarter for about 7 quarters till it was in the 200s range. And, you know, I learned a lot from the company. That they didn't have everything right, and they ultimately failed, and I started my own school. But they had a lot of great ideas and systems that I could implement, and ideas that taught me that the martial arts wasn't about punching and kicking, but it was about helping people, about the character development. So I really walked away with some good lessons and was able to make mistakes in somebody else's under somebody else's wing.
Yeah, you know, the advantage of that, and correct me if you see it differently, but, you know, in my mind, when I came to Denver, I wanted to be a franchise of the and they were undergoing some trauma at the time, and it was never to be. But the logic I've always had is that if you can start 10 or 20 years ahead of what the learning curve you would have to go through to get to the same place on your own, and it is certainly far worth it. And you know, for myself, I mean, every year you get older, you value more the being able to jump a few tiers rather than having to go through every rung of the ladder yourself and reinvent every wheel. And is that a fair description of coming in with an organization like that? Is you really start, I mean, you grew to 200 students pretty quickly, so you probably cut 10 years or maybe even 20 years off the learning curve of what most school owners who go out on their own do independently.
I think that's right, because I understood what the product I was selling was, whereas most of the guys studying martial arts didn't. And frankly, I didn't when I was a martial arts student. If I had just gone from student directly into, you know, owning my own school, I would have thought, you know, people were buying martial arts because they wanted a good roundhouse kick. And this organization, you know, taught me that that's not what it was about, and taught me what to sell and how to sell it, and, you know, how to make that, you know, really come to life in my classes, so that my classes
yep.
were actually a reflection of that product. And that was an invaluable lesson. I think I've improved upon that lesson since, certainly, but you know what? The fundamental ideas that I learned in those first few years of running a school for somebody else were so important that I wouldn't want to go back, and I wouldn't erase those years for anything. I'd be in a terrible trouble without them.
And I can tell you from our experience of doing the little regional seminars, and as you know, between Master Smith and Master Miller and myself, we've talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of school owners the last couple of years. The vast majority of the industry doesn't get that this is, regardless of what you're teaching, whether it's 7-year-olds or 40-year-old men or women, it's about the personal development. It's about the overall sense of emotional development. It's about the sense of confidence. It's not about the individual techniques. And the difference between the ones who are thriving and the ones who are suffering, and the difference between the ones who are charging a relatively high tuition and those who are charging a low tuition, is recognizing that it's not about the thing, it's about the outcome for the student.
Absolutely, and I see I'm literally twice as much as any other competitor in town, and three times as much as others, and it's not even an issue for me. You know, people come in and say, oh, you know, I heard this other school's cheaper. Oh, okay. Well, you know, for what they do, that's probably the right price. And
yeah.
they nod their heads
yeah.
and go, oh, okay, you're right.
Good answer. Let's tell them a little bit about your location. You're not in a densely populated metropolis there. So, tell them a little bit about where you are and what your population base is like.
Well, I'm in Enfield, Connecticut, and that's a small town north of Hartford, but not quite a suburb. It's sort of between two small cities, and so. Across the street from my school, there's, you know, a little bit plot of farmland, and it's a suburban area, not higher end. I'd say a generation ago, most people in the area were either working on farms or in mills.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really coming along. It's moving in the right direction. We, you know, 5 years ago we had 0 Starbucks. We now have 3. And the franchises are starting to move in. So I'm not in a situation where I'm like, oh, my gosh, I should be moving right away. This area is improving. But it's not a high-income area like a lot of other areas of Connecticut. I'm very far from New York City, and I'm not close to Boston. So it's what it is. And I probably, if I had done some demographic research and chose where to put my school in the first place rather than just taking the place, you know, that was available with the company I started with, I probably wouldn't have chosen here, but, you know, by the time I was on my own, I had 5 years in and a good student base, and I've been able to capitalize on that.
Yeah.
And it just means that the way I have to market is different than if I were in a busy, you know, high-income, high-density area.
Well, you probably have to work a lot harder for each individual new student you get in. And, you know, it's again, it's kind of like if you went fishing at the pond that's been stocked with you know, a bunch of fish. Is different from if there's, you know, if there's not quite so many. And not to use an inelegant metaphor, but let's talk about now. Your primary focus is on families and kids right now. What would you say your ratio is between adults and kids in your program?
I would say it's about 80% children. And then, you know, the remaining 20% are adults, obviously. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Of the children, about 10% of those are in the real young range, 3 to 5, and the rest of them are in that 6 to 11 range. And I have a fair percentage of teenagers too. But to be honest, almost all the teenagers I have are people who started when they're younger and then grew up in the school. And my retention rate's very good. I've been doing this for 16 years. I started in 1996 when I graduated college. And the school's been mine for 11 years now. But I just had three students go off to college this month who started with me in preschool. And I expect that will continue on now that I've been doing this for long enough to have the experience. And that's what makes, you know, the martial arts the greatest career. My parents were teachers, and just having the opportunity to mentor people for, you know, basically their whole lives. It's unique, and it's what gets me out of bed every day. And after doing this many times, I've never, even a single day, left work going, oh, God, I got to get out of here. I've left work saying, oh, boy, I really want to go home, but never to get away from here, but to go someplace else I wanted to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so fulfilling, and different than a teacher in a public school environment. As you just said, we get to see them from preschool to, you know, graduating from college many times, and having that longevity. I as you know, I've had many, many staff who started with me when they were 6 years old or 7 years old, and, you know, we're still around when they're in their 30s or even I'd hate to admit them old enough but a few of them that were into their early 40s. So it's so empowering that way. Jonathan, you had for a while done transport after school care. What's your thinking about that? I know you're kind of phasing out of that. What did you like about it? What don't you like about it? Somebody else who's thinking about it, or perhaps somebody who's doing that now. What would you tell them about your experiences and results?
Well, when the economy was good, it actually was really great, and it helped my school grow to where it was financially, mm-hmm. where I wanted it to be, because it does make a whole lot of money fairly easily. And when you have 30 or 40 kids paying you, you know, $90 a week on top of their tuition, that's a good bump, you know. So it's an extra, $15,000-$20,000 a month. And, you know, you're paying some high school kids to watch them before and after class and then put them in your regular classes, or they get their own separate class if there's that many. So it's a good thing to do if your facility has a space for it and you have a depth of bench like I do. That's something that, you know, if I have a talent, it would be staff development. And that being said, I got out of it over this year. This September is the first time that I've been not had it for, maybe 8 years. And the reason why is as the economy slowed down, a lot of parents, you know, had one parent at home and couldn't afford to do what we wanted to do. And so the numbers started to shrink. And I also started to realize that I could achieve similar financial results with increasing mm-hmm. our prices and increasing our value here so that I could achieve the financial goals with less headaches, because it meant, my feeling was that the reason people were bringing their kids into the after-school program is because they needed care and because they thought that what we were offering was better than sticking their kids in daycare. Especially, daycare is great for a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old, I feel, you know, but once they get to 6, 7, 8, they just stick them in front of a video game machine or something equally useless. And so what I felt was the appeal for parents is, look, your children are going to kind of exercise, they're going to learn how to be more confident, they're going to learn how to be more focused. And what I realized is I could offer those same benefits with them being here for a couple hours a week with a more developed leadership program. And listening to all the guys in the inner circle and I've been a coach of yours since I think I started that program way back when.
Yeah.
And I just learned that, hey, there's other ways to generate the income, other ways to have that kind of long-term difference, and I didn't have to get up every time there was a snow day or offer camps on all the regular school days off. And as my children got to be school age and I wanted to spend days with them, and I wanted to allow my staff to do the same thing with their children, it just seemed to make less sense. So I got out of it this year for the first time, and for the previous couple of years I sort of made it a perk of leadership, so I sort of trimmed it down to 6 or 7 students, and they sort of became my de facto storm team. And that was comfortable. I enjoyed doing that. I just decided not to do that this year. So I think it's a great business if you want to be in that business. If you don't want to be in that business, I wouldn't recommend you go in. And if you're going to go into that business, you know, just like I've heard you recommend a dozen times, go into it as a separate entity business that you're serious about, not as sort of a perk or a additional revenue stream to your existing karate school, because it really does become its own thing.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the real important part. And, you know, I had really, you know, tested it out in franchise locations. The horror story I had is one of our guys who was doing a really good job was running a school, grossing 45,000 to 50,000 a month. They just bought a 5,000 square foot house and a $75,000 Mercedes and a $25,000 Harley, and was doing fabulous. Decided to kick off the after school thing and didn't staff it up separately. Overlapped, in fact, ended up out driving a bus from time to time. And the after school program thing got up to about 10,000 a month, and the school dropped from 45,000 a month to 25,000 a month. And it's the problem is they both got to be, as you just said, separate businesses, very little crossover from staff. I mean, obviously you have some back and forth with the instructors, but you know, I see school owners who can't figure out why they're, you know, not doing well in their primary school, and they're out driving a van picking kids up at the after school program. And it just doesn't make any sense. Going all the way back, Nick Coquinas, who was, as you know, one of my mentors, he did this in the, I guess it would be late 50s, early 60s with dance schools. And his metaphor was, you can't be driving the bus. You got to not be, you got to personally not be the one doing the $8 an hour activity. And at the same time, you've got to have a fully staffed daycare business and a fully staffed martial arts school to make the two work. That having been said, is it can be good money, but you also, to reiterate what you said, is a strong leadership program done well, you can charge the same amount of money for a couple of three lessons a week and really have as much impact as you would have on them in comparison to having them 3 or 4 hours a day. Is that a fair assessment?
It's very fair. In fact, I've been tracking. One of the things that I'm good about is writing down numbers. So I've been tracking my average student value over the course of the last 10 years. And my income now is higher than it's ever been, including when I had 40 kids in the after-school program paying an extra, you know, $85, $90 a week. So I've been able to make up that income through other ways. And what I'm doing now is less, there's less, you know, first off, there's no after-school program. Second off, I actually have less students than I did in 2007. And even though that's true, my per revenue has gone up. And it's actually allowed me to maintain a comparable income to what we were earning before with a lot less staff. I had 13 staff. Now I have half that now.
Yeah. You've always been well, if not dramatically overstaffed. But let's talk about that in particular, because it's so important. Is, you know, in the bulk of the recession here, you are certainly in an area that was impacted as much as anywhere. Perhaps maybe not as much as Fresno, California. That's a different story, but as much as just about anywhere. And it became harder and harder and harder to get new enrollments. But at the same time, we've been working harder and harder and harder at student value. Tell them about how that has panned out. I mean, you now have much lower payroll, higher quality people, higher value per student, a better income with lower students, and probably fewer headaches. Is that more or less right?
That's all completely right. You know, one of the things that was a little frightening, in 2007 I had many consecutive years, you know, almost since the inset of the school, where I was right around the 300 student line. And when the economy crashed, what I noticed was my retention didn't change at all. The people who were in my school and saw the value, my retention did not go down. They were staying at just as much as they had when times were good. And I was proud of that. But what I did find was that my ability to get new people in, my closing ratios in particular, just went through the floor. It was just much more difficult. You know, it's sort of like people would hear the price in the old days and they go, oh, okay, 157, I guess I can put that together, because back then that was my price. I guess I can put that together this month and things will get better, so I'll be able to figure it out for next month too. And now, you know, my opening rate is 197, but the conversation inside your head is, wow, 197, I guess I could put that together this month, but boy, am I going to be able to put that together in 3 months? I don't know. because they're assuming things just, you know, are going to or could get worse. And that's loosening up a little bit, but there's definitely that fear, and I definitely felt the recession and the shift in the psychology and the buying mindset of you know, parents out there, and I completely understand it. You know, it's something that affected everyone in our community, you know, some in a small way and some in huge ways. And what's been beautiful is this ability to really ramp up a leadership program, which has allowed me to, as I said, have the. It's funny, I have a beautiful chart, which if you can imagine a line that has a slow decrease at about, you know, 10% decrease in a slow, with one line, that's my enrollment, and another line which is a 10% increase on the, coming from the bottom left, which is my student value, you know, how much money I'm making per student each month, and then a line which goes straight across the middle, and sort of meets them on the far right side of the graph. That's my gross income.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really saved me in a time where I didn't have to let go any of my staff. I did let, you know, some people who went off to college and go off to college and not replace them. And I had one guy, you know, in his 60s retire, and I didn't replace them. But I didn't have to fire anybody, which, you know, was something I dreaded doing because I love my staff. And it really is, it's been a fabulous experience because when I looked at my school, and really I think Toby was responsible for this conversation occurring in my head, but one of those things that I've had that conversation with myself so many times since that it felt like it came from me, but I'm really clear it didn't. It came from you guys, which is that in my school structure now I have a beginner class and intermediate advanced, like that, you know, broken up. And what's distinct in those levels is technical. And then on the other column, I've got a character development program that starts at white belt and doesn't really change a whole lot until, you know, ever. It's like a powerful words kind of thing. It's not mm-hmm. tiered. And yet I had a leadership tier and another tier of leadership above that. But I wasn't requiring my students to go through that, even though column one was about technical expertise and column two was about personal development. And it's really obvious to everybody who's in my school that what the school is about is personal development. So it just made a whole lot of sense for me to require my students to go through the tiers of character development, for require them essentially to do leadership if they want to progress to the higher belts, because that's what my school is about. My school is about becoming a better person. My school is about becoming a leader. My school is about expressing yourself in a way powerfully and confidently that people are going to want to follow you. And if you can't do that, I want you to learn how to do that on your path to be a black belt, because for me, to have a shy black belt who's afraid to talk about themselves isn't really what a black belt represents in my mind. I want powerful people, and not just in their you know, right hook. So it's really been a wonderful fit for my value system and for my finances, and it's really brought some integrity into my school, which is called Integrity Martial Arts. So it's been a good fit. And there's one other thing I just want to, while I'm ranting here for a minute.
Sure, go ahead.
What I often hear is, you know, from some of the people in the room who come to the seminars, whenever you're in the area, I go to support you. And when I talk to the other school owners, they say, oh, well, you know what, you have to sell out to do well, you know, student quality is going to go down. And my student retention has stayed the same or gone up since I started increasing prices and offering more services for the money. And because I'm offering more services, I can charge more. And it's been this wonderful feedback loop where people appreciate what we do more. I'm able to attract better people, and that includes my future staff, so my staff become better people. And so at every level, you know, I have DVD footage of all my black belt tests going back forever, and I can look at them and go, oh, man, I wouldn't pass that guy this year. And 5 years ago, they were one of my best. And so the student quality keeps going up in terms of the technical stuff, in terms of the character stuff. It's just blown out of the water. And in terms of my student happiness, the best way to measure that, I think, is retention, because if they're happy, they stay. And that's gotten, you know, gotten better or stayed the same even throughout the poor economy. So that whole argument that, you know, if you want to make money in your school, you're going to have to make compromises in your art or in your integrity is just nonsense. And it seems to me that the opposite's been true. When I try to save a dollar here or there and cut back on what I want to do instead of really doing everything I want to do for my students and charging them for it, I was compromising what I really wanted to do for my students, and doing the opposite feels a heck of a lot better and earns better too.
Yeah, and maybe to emphasize what you just said, the better you get, at getting your revenue and income stable, the more you're tempted to, or the less you're tempted to ever make a decision based upon the financial consequence if it's an issue of student development, quality, progress, curriculum. And, you know, I've said it a million times, but the schools I know, almost without exception, I say almost because there's, you know, there's always a few short-termers that change this odds. But the schools that are there 5, 10, 15, 20 years later still making a great income are the ones that have unimpeachable integrity from the standpoint of student development and unimpeachable integrity from the standpoint of really caring about their students. If you don't care about your students, people figure that out pretty quickly. You can't fake that. And no amount of chasing cash creates a quality environment and long-term success. Why do you think martial artists think the other way? Why do you think they think that they're going to have to sell out in order to make a six-figure income running a school?
I think the reason why is because we think teachers should be about their students. And I think that's right. Students should be about their teachers.
Sure.
Is that wrong? Teachers should be about their students. And if your priority is on your students, then people will naturally just assume that that means your priority can't be on, you know, charging the money, because a relationship with – I think people's fundamental thinking is a little bit miswired there. They think asking somebody for a check is taking from them, and offering them services is giving to them. And if they can do offer them the most and take the least, then they're being a really good person. And I've gone through that psychology, and that's why I, you know, recognize it. I think it's really that simple. They think that taking a bigger check is taking more, and giving more lessons is giving more. But where I think it gets backwards is that people give as a way to feel like they belong. They give as a way of recognizing the value. Now, my father works for a state university, and my sister-in-law works for Harvard, and I sit around all the time at tables with lots of academics from, you know, various institutions, some of which charge $12,000 a year, and some of which charge, you know, $60,000 a year, you know, at the college level, and compare academic experiences, and their academics, you know, in terms of what they offer the students and the opportunities available in the various departments, are very similar. But people will feel like they've gotten more out of a Harvard education because Harvard's able to, A, charge more, and, B, offer slightly better services in a number of peripheral things. So I'm not saying that, you know, I do a better job teaching a roundhouse kick to my students than the guy down the street who's charging $90 a month. In fact, I'm not sure that I am. That he's been doing martial arts for 10 years longer than I have, and he's probably pretty good. I haven't gone down and checked him out lately. But what I am saying is that the things that in some people's mind are peripheral, the character development projects and the things that we put up on the walls and the DVDs and the video footage and all those peripheral things that enrich and enhance the experience, that I'll talk a little bit later in the conversation if we have time about some of the extra things we do for our students in terms of events and on our calendar, those things enrich the experience to make it worth much, much more. The conversations we have with the parents, the conversations that we have with the students in terms of the conferencing and so forth, that are a regular part of our program, add a value that exceeds the amount that I'm taking. And in fact, if I charged less, I think that they would feel less benefit. And I've had that experience directly as my prices have gone up. I've had people not feel like I've been greedy, but been appreciative what we do more. I've had less complaints about pricing. And I know, you know, for some of these people, it's not because it's easy for them to afford. I'm not attracting a much, much richer clientele, honestly. But the people I am attracting are more dedicated to what we do because it is a bigger hit. And, you know, it's one of these things where the people who are here because they're committed to being here. They're committed to what we offer. And it's not an after-school activity for them, because for them to expense this much of their income means that they're serious about it.
Yeah, and absolutely, and I think part of it that you said there to reemphasize is the quote from Cialdini's book: "Is absent other criteria, price determines perception of value." Is as you raise your tuition rate, is possibly it's true that you make people take a second and third thought about this on the way in the door or the way through the renewal process. But then when they commit, they really commit. And what we always see is that schools at the low end of the tuition level have the highest turnover. Schools at the higher end of the tuition level have the lowest turnover. And so, therefore, the irony is the more you're charging on a per-month basis, they've saved vastly more months, and therefore the overall lifetime value, if you want to use that term, of a student goes way up. And it's an incredible advantage all the way around. The other thing is that I think some people think, for instance, Peak Performers Inner Circle, when we're working together, is they think that it's all about sales and, you know, raise the price and high pressure sales and slick marketing ideas. Give them your perspective of what it is we really work on.
Oh, well, that's the fabulous. You know, I named my school Integrity Martial Arts, not as a scam. It's because integrity is one of the things I really value. And I told you earlier in the conversation, my parents are both teachers. So I came into this because I value that teaching relationship. I value, you know, making a difference for other people. That's what I'm about. That's why I didn't go into investment banking or military intelligence or any of the other opportunities that may have come along for me, was because I thought I could make more of a difference doing what I do here. And so each quarter, I get a chance to meet with you, the Inner Circle group in person, Peak Performance group in person, and each month I'm on a telephone or teleconference setting, and then a private coaching call with you or Toby, and every single one of those conversations, without exception, there has always been this sense that what I'm trying to do is provide more for my students and ask for a tuition that is proportional, not even equal to. I try to provide a lot more than what I charge. And what the Inner Circle group has allowed me to do is have the direct path to offering the most to my students, have the direct path to, you know, providing the best curriculum, providing the best systems to, once my students are in the door, for them to, you know, be blown away. Now, the challenge on the other side of it is letting people who aren't students yet know about that, because marketing is sort of this idea where I'm going to try and give them as close as I can the experience of what my thrilled students are having before they join the school. And that can be really difficult. But that's why, you know, as we become better at marketing skills, and I've learned a tremendous amount through the training in the Inner Circle, we are able to communicate that message more honestly, more fully, more completely in a way that people will get. Because oftentimes, you know, the way that I think and the way that, you know, the moms who have the children who I'd like to join the school think are radically different. And one of the big shifts in my marketing has been to try and present this in a way that would appeal to them rather than present it in a way that would appeal to me. And I had to give up. Oh, you know what? I like the way that ad looks. I had to think, well, let's listen to the experts about what's going to appeal to, you know, this target audience. So a few things I've learned about marketing are, one, be honest. Two, emphasize the things that are going to be most important to your prospective clients rather than what are most important to you. Three, don't do one thing. I've almost never had a home run each year in marketing where all of a sudden I had something that threw 60 or 70 students in the school. I know there's a lot of guys in the Inner Circle group who've had those home runs. I'm not one of them. I've had lots of small successes, 10 here, 8 here, 12 here, 14 here. And the rest of my students, and I'm signing up about 150 people a year, come from 2 here, 3 here, 2 there, 5 there, 9 here, 6 there, and every month doing 4 or 5 things. So in the next few weeks, we have a number of, you know, great marketing opportunities. I'm sitting down tomorrow with a TV producer. It's the first really big budget advertising I've done all year. But also next week I have a child safety fair where we close our parking lot and our plaza here, and we have about 1,000 people come in. And actually, for the first time, the governor's coming to do a proclamation about our business. And so that's a big deal, and we'll attract, you know, the local town council, and we're inviting the superintendent and all the principals to come be here with that. And we'll collect a lot of information and probably sign a few people up that day and several people up afterwards. And what I find is that each one of these little things that we do can be fun, can be valuable, builds our reputation, puts our message out into the community. And if we're smart about collecting contact information and following up, which we are, it makes a difference for our business. And they can be fun. I'm doing a little thing that I'll invite the press to, which is called the Stuffed in a Trunk Seminar. I'm not going to recommend this one because it's a little risky liability, but I actually take my students out into the parking lot and I teach them how not to get stuffed in a trunk, and if they do, how to pull the wires and do the things, pop the trunks with the handles and so forth, about abduction prevention. And it's one of those unique, memorable experiences that if you do it carefully and take your time, it's fun and safe for your students, and they'll talk about, oh, yeah. And it's a little crazy, but I think if you want to be noticed, you have to be a little crazy sometimes. So I've learned to really enjoy marketing. It used to be a dirty word, and now it's just about teaching what I want to teach and letting people know what we're doing. And I've had a lot of fun with it, and we're doing it all the time, by which I mean there's always something going on, not that it's sucking up a lot of my day.
Yeah, well, don't skip over something you said a minute ago. See, I think a lot of people think that marketing is maybe about spending a bunch of money and getting it out of the park. And most of the schools that you and I both know who are very successful, it's rare that they're doing something where they go get 20 enrollments from one thing. I asked Jeff Smith the same question in a call we did recently, and I said, if there's one big thing you would tell everybody to do, what is it? He said, there is no one big thing. I do 20 things every month and get one or two students from each of the 20 things, and do very well by doing it that way. And it's the thing not to miss is you've got to just have a long list of things you're doing, starting with internal referrals, going to community outreach, and then lead follow-up, which you're very good at. If anybody raises their hand a little bit, you've got to continually follow up on them. And then from time to time, when you have the cash flow, maybe some big, you're getting ready to, what you're referring to as the TV blitz that you're getting ready to do.
So absolutely, and what I've gotten better at over the years, by listening to, I remember my first Inner Circle meeting. Alex Barge came out, he's a brilliant guy, and had a Manhattan marketing background, and as one of the Inner Circle members, somebody you should listen to very carefully when his CDs come out through NAMA. He put down his marketing plan on the desk, and I just thought, I flipped through this, and my eyes were, my eyebrows were up off my head. It was just outstanding how many things he were doing, he was doing with each month, and there was a few different lists. One of the lists was things that I do seasonally, and there was like a Halloween thing and a, Chinese New Year thing and this, that, and the other. And then there were things that I do every month, and there were about, 15 of those things too. And then there were some other lists. And I was looking at it, and my first feeling was I was impressed and overwhelmed, like, man, this guy's working so hard. And as I started to think about, how hard would it actually be to do that? Well, I'd set that up once, and I'd never have to do it again. How hard would it be to do that? Well, once I did it two or three times, I could just sort of start recycling content. And how hard would it be to do that? Well, that's going to take some work, but it's probably worth it. And just looking at his list and what I really have gotten, if I were to look at the long-term scope of the impact that being in the program has done for me with NAMA, is that I've learned the value of systems. I've learned how to make my job easier by taking some of the things that I would redo and reinvent every month, every year, and creating something that is solid and workable, and setting it on autopilot. And I'll admit, I'm a tinkerer, so I might go back every year and improve it a little bit here and there. But that's because I want to, not because I have to. And a year when, in a month where I don't want to look at that, I don't need to. It's fine. So pause while that rings.
You're good.
Okay, so what the value of systems has allowed me to do is it's freed me from the burden of reproducing stuff every month, and it's allowed me to concentrate on what I want to concentrate each month. And it's allowed me to go deeper, and it's allowed me to go further each month with less effort. So that's been a huge gift to me and allowed me to spend less time in my school and to get better results with less stress.
So, there's a lot of members who probably have been beat over the head at this point about what we're doing with Inner Circle and Peak Performers. But if one of them was sitting out there and they're skeptical, and I'm sure you were coming into it as well, what would you tell them? What is perhaps different than you thought it was coming in, and what would you tell them in evaluating if it's a good fit for them?
I'm trying to think back to my reservations because, of course, I've drunk. I've drunk the Kool-Aid. I'm a firm believer now in it. I remember at one point I was concerned that it would be about selling me a Mile High Karate franchise, and I was invited to go to a Discovery Day, and it was amazing. I remember taking lots of notes. I'm thinking, boy, I don't know whether I should do this right now or not, but either way, I got, you know, my trip's worth, never mind the Inner Circle meeting, just from hearing how these guys do things, because the systems you've developed for that, for your own schools, are so outstanding. They're a good role model for anybody, and whether you choose to do it or not, I would highly recommend doing the Discovery Day. So that was a real gift to me, and that set that aside for me, because when we were done, he said, well, what do you think? And I said, I'm not sure, let me think about it. He said, okay, let me know. And, you know, we got together one more time. He said, so what do you think? I said, I think not right now. And he said, okay, well, let me know. And that was, I think that's been the end of it. So I would call that zero pressure.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was a huge contribution to have that. And the other part of it was that you're not a consultant who's sitting in an office thinking about the way martial arts could work. You're sitting, you know, visiting your schools and talking with school owners every day, both in an organization that you have direct control over so you can test things, and school owners that you don't have any control over because, you know, they're just associated through NAPMA, and hearing how people are doing other things and their successes and failures. So it's actually been a huge resource, and listening to you and Toby about what's going on in your schools and very open about sharing as much as you can, that's been huge. And when I go, sometimes I go, you know, when I'm writing the check, I'll go, oh, well, this is a lot of money. And always within the first couple of hours of being there and having traveled, and I always go, oh, boy, how could I not have earned the few $1,000s back from the information I just got in the first few hours? And, you know, those are the first few hours. So the trip has always been worth it. You know, the time away from the family and the expense has always been, you know, something that I look carefully at because I'm a small business owner and be responsible not to. And always within a couple of hours, I'm very clear that it was worth coming. And then, you know, the rest of the time is icing on the cake and allows me to do the things that I've been doing with the confidence to know that it's been tested, other people are going through it, and you know, where I'm failing, you know, other people have failed and then come through the other side. So it alleviates some of that fear. It generates some of the confidence that happens from having a positive peer group. And, you know, the guys in the Inner Circle are fantastic people. And sometimes I'm looking around the room thinking, wow, it's really great to be with a group of martial arts instructors who are every bit, you know, as bright as I could expect anyone to be, who are genuinely nice, caring people. You know, oh, can you tell me how you do that? Sure, come sit down. I'll, you know, give you the files off my laptop if you want, or I can just talk you through it. So very generous of heart, which I guess is why they're so successful. I think that's one of those ingredients of success. What other reservations do people have joining the Inner Circle, Master Oliver? Because frankly, I've kind of forgotten mine.
Well, I think that obviously it's tuition and commitment is the reason why students don't join. It's the reason why perhaps people don't move into the higher level with us. And the conversation I always have with people, and correct me if this is different from your experience, is that it's really not about taking a given amount of tuition out of their current bottom line. It's about increasing their revenue to the point where it's a 10, 20, 30 to 1 return on investment. How would you tell people to think about that?
Well, you know, I think everybody who's listening to this call at the Peak Performer Inner Circle level understands that sometimes we pay money to get a return, like in advertising. And you know, consulting and education are the same thing. It's. I mean, the reason I guess that argument doesn't even occur to me is it strikes me as ludicrous. I mean, we're in an educational venture. We offer information and knowledge in exchange for tuition. And Inner Circle does the same thing, except for that instead of, you know, creating martial arts students, it creates martial arts instructors and martial arts school owners. And so it just, how could that not make sense to a school owner? The only thing that I think people could question is whether, you know, tuition is worth value. And they do have an opportunity to sample a whole bunch of different DVDs and CDs, and I think that sometimes they can get some of your books on tape, and all it takes is, you know,
yeah,
sit down for an hour and listen to that and go, oh my gosh, there's a whole world of stuff I don't know about. And one of my favorite parts about Inner Circle, just from an entertainment value, is watching people's first couple meetings, because everybody has the same look. You know, it's like any other kind of fraternity kind of thing where the new guy comes in and you look at him and they all sort of have a similar experience and everyone's blown away, like, just like, oh my God, I totally understand how little I know. And as smart as these guys are coming in, and some of them are very successful, you know, we had a school owner join who was already doing, I don't know, $800,000 a year in one location, and really sharp, bright guy. You know, I'm pretty bright and way smarter than I am, and so is his partner. And he came in, and I remember looking, is he going to have the same kind of feeling of just sort of being overwhelmed by the amount of opportunity that there is from the Inner Circle? And sure enough, he did. I approached him at the end and kind of had his head on his hand and typing with one hand and into his laptop, and said, how's it going? He said, well, oh my God, this is amazing. I don't have the school I want now, and I see that for the first time. And just watching, you know, him and so many other owners who've come in transform their schools to be the schools that they always wanted but didn't know how to get there or didn't realize that they were off the mark. And there's very little price tag you can put on that experience.
It is amazing, the drinking from a fire hose result. And I think what moderates that is all the one-on-one stuff that we do to help prioritize the list. Because, you know, certainly if you go somewhere and you end up with a priority list of 30 things, you might as well not have one at all. But we then are able to go back and focus on what the number one thing is, number two thing, number three thing.
Yeah.
Hey, Jonathan, we have monopolized a lot of your time, and I think we're about out of time. But what's one or two things you might add before we have to ring off today?
Look at what you really want. Figure out how you're going to get there and who's going to help you, because doing it alone is not a great option. And when you look at who you want on your team, look for the best people, people who've been there and done that. Talk to them, get their advice. You know, a lot of people are available from NEPMA, but a lot of them are elsewhere in the world. There's lots of successful people both in and out of this organization. And really create the thing that you want to, that you're passionate about, and don't let your fear stop you from creating that. Charge what you think is the right price. Talk to people about what it is you're looking to get out of your school, and talk to your students about what they want to get out of it too, so you can provide them with what they're looking for. And just create something that you can be proud of and that your students can be proud of, and that you can then provide the value that you'd like to.
Absolutely, and you never have to compromise student quality, never have to compromise your curriculum in order to make a good living. And if anything, you have to get to be better and better as a teacher, so you teach them the right things at the right time and keep them longer. But hey, we've gotten some great value. I'm sure everybody's really appreciated it. If it's okay with you, we'll do a follow-up here and really perhaps delve even deeper into how to have really high quality retention as you do, and frankly, how to market in an area where you're not, you don't even flooding them in the doors from anything you do, like if you were in Manhattan or someplace. So thank you very much, sir. I have appreciated it, and I'm sure everybody has gotten a lot of value out of it.
Thank you, Master Oliver. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.